Today's whole challenge has a special prize, a singular piece of candy. And the hole that I am dreaming of is a wooded par 3. It is a slightly left to right moving shot, and it is about 250 feet long. Compared to the rest of the course, this hole is quite dark as far as the light. There's probably a few other greens on this course that might share that, but this hole feels like you really step into the forest.
Oh, I know what it is. 14, 15 Milo McIver.
Yeah. The first one.
The first one.
Yeah.
The little one with the tee pad that doesn't face in the right direction.
Ding, ding, ding.
I was thinking that too.
The little ace hole.
What? I want the candy.
You can have, I'll give you the candy.
Okay, thank you.
Welcome back, everybody. It's been 2 weeks since Champions Cup, so we have a lot to go over. Champions Cup results, what we did in the off week, at least off week on the Pro Tour, and now we're sitting lakeside in Shelton, Washington, the day before, Cascade Challenge. And how you doing, boys?
Great. Excited to be back on tour. Those off weeks are just hard. We always can't wait to get back to competition. So we're excited. My first time playing here, so double excited.
My first time playing disc golf in Washington. I've only driven through Washington on the way back from Portland to Minneapolis because it takes you through Spokane. But yeah, so it's my first time to Western Washington at all. And the closest that I ever got was in 2021 with The Bird. We were in southwestern Washington on the beach.
Vancouver. Yeah, we were on
We went up like even... Vancouver. What's the town across from Astoria? Well,
so I know what you're saying, but technically our Airbnb for Portland Open was in Vancouver, Washington in 2021.
Yeah, Simon,
Thomas Gilbert, Chris Clemens, and...
Was Calvin there?
I think Calvin. Chandler Fry.
Oh, it wasn't Calvin?
It was Chandler Fry.
And you had that crazy trick shot because there was like that second floor, but the first floor there was a section that was two floors high. There was no ceiling. And so you had that little like spinning shot with the... Maybe it was a catch disc into the bathroom, and it would like shoot back across, and then it would like go through the little slats in the railing, and you would catch it.
That was a great Airbnb. That was a good week.
That was a great week.
You won.
I won. That was the, sorry, Kevin, but the Kevin Jones meltdown year.
Mm-hmm.
I was part of it too.
It was you two, Kevin and Ricky.
Yep.
Yo.
Wow. That was 4 years ago, which is crazy. Time flies.
Yeah. Eagle took us to that vegan pizza place twice.
Those were the vegan days.
Yeah. It's nostalgic. It's nostalgia hour. But yeah, we're up here on Island Lake, which I just realized is named after the little island in the middle, which Simon paddled to, right?
Oh, yeah.
And was it a worthy island?
Magical. It's been the windiest year in the recording of the history of the world. So it was like sketchy out there on these kayaks. And one of these kayaks, by the way, has a hole in the bottom and it starts filling with water. It's kind of sketchy.
Like not the natural hole, like an actual hole,
like the Titanic.
Oh my gosh. Was it the one that you took from the side of the house?
I don't know. I don't know if we caused it. I don't think we did, but... Like, it's hard to get it out of the water afterwards because it's just full of water and weighs of 500 pounds, probably.
Yeah.
But no, this Airbnb is nice, too. We have an island in the middle of a lake.
Did it really weigh 500 pounds? So you
yeah. Not even Dustin could get it out, and he's, like, really strong.
Yeah, but so 500 pounds is, 500 like, pounds insane. Is
quite hefty.
I mean, it's us three combined-ish.
Maybe you're right.
I think I'm actually on point with that.
That's very close.
Okay. Well, it was just the one that was just sitting upside, right by the shore, right?
It's one of those beige ones.
Okay, interesting.
What do you weigh?
I think I weigh 180 pounds.
I'm 185. What are you, Joey? 170? Mm-hmm.
Exactly right. 535. Simon Lazar.
Not bad.
I do.
Champions Cup.
Yeah, Champions Cup. I was going to conclude off the whole dreaming by saying that I have a kind of second fan who isn't Jeremiah, but somebody else who's keeping track of this score. And I think it's Eagle and I at 4 and Simon at 3. It's very close, actually. It's not a lopsided affair at the moment, from what I understand. But, last time we talked was the morning of. The day before.
Day before. It was President's Cup Day.
Right. And how'd it go, boys? Let's talk about you guys first. Your experiences out there at Swenson Park and beyond.
Eagle beat me by one, I think, right?
So I'm first on the tee?
Go ahead.
Oh, man, I have to go back in the archives to even think about this event.
It feels so long ago.
It does feel like very long ago. I remember I had a pretty good first round at Swenson, and it kind of set the tone for the entire event. I think I was in 13th after day one, and it was kind of the same story throughout the entire week. I was almost there. Putting felt almost good. Shots felt almost good. And the entire tournament for me was almost good. I think the coolest thing for me during the week was I got onto Chase Card the final round, and I had Paul, Ricky, and AB on the card. And from my understanding, there was more people watching Chase Card than lead card. So that felt pretty special and fun. There was a ton of people out there. So it felt like I was putting on a show for some people, which was nice because I haven't felt that way in a while. But 3 under to finish wasn't good enough to maintain a top 10 spot. Finished in 13th. And while it's not bad, Swenson, I usually have high expectations, and I couldn't help but feel just a little bit sad afterwards. Sad and sore. I threw so many forehands that the next day my neck really was killing me. And it still kind of hurts from over almost 2 weeks ago. But a lot of good to take from the event and use it as fire and momentum going into this week. How about you, Simon?
Yeah, I was just thinking, you mentioned the forehands, and in the MVP practice round at the end, we said, may the best forehand win, kind of like that, because we noticed quickly that it was such a forehand dominant course. And then Isaac ended up winning, who probably threw the least forehands out of anyone tied with James Conrad, I would guess. My tournament was similar-ish. I'm most disappointed with my mental game. I was letting myself fall into complain mode too much, and some of these fairways are, and greens especially, are really bumpy and rooty, I'd call it, where just kind of random things can happen when your disc hits the ground. And I just felt overwhelmed at some points by the reaction my disc was getting when hitting the ground. And I don't know. Once you have victim mentality on a course like that, you're just completely game over. And yeah, it was a complete meh event. I don't know how I finished in the top 20. I think everyone kind of played bad that entire week. Like the fact that Paul shot 14 under round one, which is by the way, completely insane.
Paul
Eagle watched that.
I saw it.
Paul was 20 under through 28 holes.
Yeah. And that the winner was 26, right?
26.
Yeah. Mind blowing. Like, no one would have guessed anything, I think, within 5 to 10 strokes of that before the tournament started.
I mean,
the
ratings
would
agree with you here because it's showing here Isaac averaging 10.51 for the event, which is, I would say,
that's
not
low.
As high as.
I will say, it was pretty windy the entire event.
It was.
Like, annoyingly windy. It wasn't super windy, but I think annoyingly windy was the perfect
just
way
enough to be annoying.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, there was nothing really to remember for me from that event. I got the eagle in the final round on the par 5. What is that, hole 12 or something?
Hole 12.
Yeah. That was probably my most fun moment because there's the big gallery there on that pirate island, they called it. But besides that, man, it was just meh throw after meh result after kind of it all felt below average. But my result was better than I think I deserved. But I think most people felt that way that tournament.
I think, you know, fortunately for you and I, is we throw generally pretty far, which definitely helps on that course. So a meh finish for us on a course like that, it translates pretty well, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah, but off the course, we had a good week. I stayed with Paul McBeth all week and his wife and son, and that was a lot of fun. Joey was there too. We had the biggest steak night in the history of steak nights, which I think we had like 40 people almost.
Legendary.
I think we had more.
The amount of meat we bought that day must be a record of some sorts.
And I almost got kicked out of I did get kicked out of Costco.
Yeah, I was part of it. I walked in like I owned the place, and then Joey was stopped by security and thrown out.
Not after putting up like probably my most, it was probably my most Karen moment. But it was like, you know,
think you Karen'd. They're just used to dealing with Karens. But you're not a Karen, so they expected you to be one. That's why they treated you like one. That's probably why you felt like one.
But I was mad. I mean, I made them get their manager, and then their manager came to me and made this. Essentially, the conversation was the manager explained the policy, and then I said, I understand your policy. I'm asking for like a one time for you to be a human. Give me 5 minutes. And then he would answer the identical, like it was a voicemail. Like he didn't even, there was no change of the words. And I just started laughing a little bit and he got kind of offended at my chuckling. And so I had saved this card until the end, but I played it right there in front of him and his two employees. And I said, sir, guess what I did about 3.5 hours ago? And he's like, because he had said the statement, nobody will ever come into Costco without a correctly matching membership card. Like, it just does. It does not happen. It's not like, not only is it not allowed,
how did
it
you get
doesn't
caught?
Happen. At
you
the front.
You gotta scan your card at the entrance.
Front. Yeah. You have to scan your card at the entrance.
I scanned this mobile app.
Well, so anyway, I said, do you know what I did here 3 hours ago? And he goes, what? And I said, I came in here with the same card, and I spent $775 on food by myself. And he was like, what? How is that possible? And it was great. And then he goes, let me see that membership card. This person can really get in trouble for what they did. And then I was like, actually, I think we're going to go now. So we spared Matt. But, yeah, I was, you know, those are big undertakings, and I love doing it, obviously, but it doesn't mean that the work isn't existing, and it was essentially like an extra run that we had been asked to do because Matt was worried we were going to run out of meat. But the funny thing is that exactly what we ended up buying was what was left over uncooked at the end. And we used it the next few days, but it was just hilarious that we didn't end up needing it. So I was just like wanting to get back to the house and just not the, I had like dealt with enough like annoying problems that I had solved on the fly beautifully the entire day. And it was just the final one that was like the spoke in my wheel, or the wrench in my wheel, I guess I should say. But other than that, it was great. We had Nate Sexton's birthday bash with some cakes. We also had the Sodanen sisters, Silva and Hetta, staying with us that whole week. And I really enjoyed getting to know Hetta. I never met her before, and she was super outgoing and really kind of just curious and very kind of strong-willed and had a lot of great opinions and was just very interesting to talk to. So we had an awesome group, I would say. I saw that you did some pretty wild trick shots in the field by the house with
the robot came over. Yeah, we're trying to film fun stuff, and Ditto Flight has been on my channel probably 3 or 4 times now. The builder, Aaron, lives just south of San Francisco, so this is his neck of the woods, and every OTB open, we message back and forth, and he comes watch the tournament, and I thought, good chance of Ditto back on the channel, yeah. And we broke some unofficial world records.
Was that this little basket that got used? I'm honored.
Yeah, that basket is a world record basket with the highest RPM 30-footer ever thrown by a robot into the basket.
I saw that one. The one that was most impressive was the air bounce.
The air bounce was really cool, too.
Insane. That was like...
Also a world record, by the way.
They were all impressive, in my opinion.
Yeah, I did the robot to human MTA shot as well. World record, 8 seconds. So, that was
and
a good day.
And the longest catch.
And over 400-foot... robot to human catch.
What disc was used for that?
A Watt. Yeah, it was tournament day, so I didn't want to catch a driver.
No kidding. That's but, yeah, a fun crush for a Watt. But yeah, we...
shout out Lodi. What a cool little place.
Yes, shout out Lodi. I went down to the MVP Airbnb a few times, which is on that main street, and that was...
I tried to find it. I couldn't.
The MVP?
Granted, I never got out of the car. It was interesting.
Yes, with those arches?
Well, I never went inside.
No,
I wanted to
just
do
the arches, like that kind of, those two walking streets, one was east-west and one was like north-south, and at the ends of them, they had these like arches that you drove through to like get into that main entrance of the main street. There was a couple, it was like, no way to get into like the downtown without going through one of them. But they weren't like huge. They were just little gates to Lodi. So shout out to Isaac Robinson and Kristen Gannon.
What?
Alluding to how it almost felt like a Kristen win. But
should we talk about that foot fault?
Oh, we should totally.
Are we going to be the 20th podcast to talk about it?
Have you listened to other podcasts already talking about it?
Oh yeah.
I need to start listening to other podcasts. Is that bad of me?
No.
I haven't heard any podcasts.
So what
about
are they
it.
Saying?
Well, I think in generally speaking it was unanimous that everyone thinks it was a bad call.
I don't think the call was bad.
I think the call was horrible.
But the call was right. But No. So this is that's what they have wrong. I think the call was right. I think the rule and the situation is incorrect. I think that the rule with slipping into your disc that gives you no advantage is something that needs to be examined. And the fact that Patrick Graziani is the only person on the property out of the 175 person field that doesn't need a second in order to enforce any ruling. Even players on that card can't make a ruling or enforce a stroke penalty without a second from anybody. So I don't even say that as like he's not like above the rest of us. I say that to like give Patrick like the chance to like not make something like that irreversible.
Just think of all the people who were playing that didn't have marshals on their card that foot faulted.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think that
I kind of want to, just for fun, call every single foot fault I see during a tournament round and see how many strokes I can add up.
But do you, like, what about...
I don't want to play with you that tournament.
Do you believe...
It's got to be 20 plus per round, I see.
How much of an advantage do you think that it is giving players? And, like, Calvin talks about a lot of times how throwing within your lie is different than just throwing. And he talks about, like, that being a different thing. Like, it's, like, part of the execution of the throw is planting inside that square. And I don't know if I think it's mixed on players, if people really think that it's an advantage or a disadvantage, foot faulting. Like, in some spots, from a standstill around a corner, 100%. But in motion, when it's a subconscious, like, non-deliberate, I want to hear your thoughts on that.
Well, you can think about it two different ways. I would argue that it doesn't make any difference unless you're deliberately trying to stretch out around a corner and get all that you can. Because if you're throwing just pretty much any shot from 200, 300 plus feet away, it's not going to give you any sort of advantage by hitting your disc. But here's the other side of the argument. If you think about foot faulting and then you maybe think about doing a standstill or deliberately try to hit your mark, then yes, that might change the way you think about the shot. Because you're going to be paying more attention to your feet and overall spatial awareness.
Yep.
I mean, I think every single player knows the rule and is trying a reasonable amount to land behind their disc.
Right.
I don't think Calvin Heimberg is trying harder to not foot fault than any other player out there. No, that makes no sense.
I think there are players who aren't thinking about it at all because it never gets called. I guarantee you there are guys on tour who aren't thinking as hard about hitting their mark perfectly. Like, all the people that you see foot faulting. Like, go play with Calvin and see how many times he foot faults. And see if it's as many times as a bunch of other random touring pros. And I think that everybody thinks about it. I think you're right there. But I think Calvin makes a more concerted effort and executes more than just thinks about it. He executes. Like, he puts that into... practices what he preaches. Because if he's going to criticize foot faults, then he... And I would assume you are the same way.
I focus on not foot faulting, of course. I try my best to land within the mark. But, I mean, I notice myself foot faulting the way Kristen did there.
Right.
All the time.
Right.
Like, completely unintentional and not because of a lack of effort of doing it properly. It's just... I don't think it's really possible if you're doing a run-up to do it every time with the freaking ground play that we have out there sometimes over sticks and stones and hills. Like, you can't do it. We have to change the rule, I think.
Yeah. Did you hear the... I only saw the clip, so I didn't listen to the full episode, but I saw the clip of the Perkins and Earhart Jomez pod. What's the name of that?
I know it, and I forgot.
I'll find it.
Oh, All Birdies, No Bogeys, or something like that?
They brought it back? That's something the same? Like that? Okay, yes, because that was an old name. I wanted to say that. I just wasn't sure if that's what they...
Anyway,
did you hear what they proposed about making the lie space large? Like, significantly larger?
I actually have not listened to what they said about it.
Yeah, they said, basically, Nate...
You didn't listen to podcasts.
Well, that's what I said at the beginning, that I only listened to the clip on Instagram that they cut. Nate suggested that you increase the size of the lie and make it so large that if you were to miss it, it would be like an egregious break of a rule. Like,
yes.
So large that... Now, the only thing that I see there is on your scramble shots now, when you have to take a patent pending, now you get like... I don't know, three times the amount of room around those
I've
corners.
I've always had thought experiments where I say, like, what if the lie was 360 degrees, like a bigger circle around the disc, and you can plant anywhere? Like, you could literally plant in front of your lie. Because then...
Think of how that would work on the green, though. Like, the amount of putts that you would get, the amount of looks that you would get that you don't get right now.
What I would say to this, it would make disc golf more exciting. People would go for more shots. They would be more aggressive, and you'd have more highlights.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently that's a bad thing in disc golf.
It does seem that way. I've never thought about a 360 lie around the disc. It kind of doesn't not make sense.
Yeah.
How do you mark that, though, if you choose to pick your disc up?
You don't mark
it. You don't mark.
And if you do mark it, you just put another disc in place of your
disc. No, you can't mark at that point.
Or just don't mark. I'd say you could...
You just couldn't throw the same disc twice in a row.
You could use your mini, but then you're only limited to behind your mini.
Or you have to place the mini exactly in the middle of where the disc was.
Right on the nipple.
There you go. I think it's okay. We should get creative. We should try new things.
I do agree with that. I just thought it was a sad call to make because it was so clearly a slip into her disc.
Yep.
Absolute zero advantage for Kristen, and with the timing there and the amount of footfalls happen like that aren't called, it didn't make any sense in my opinion.
Yep. I think that hopefully in the long term, if we see some rule changes and some improvement in this particular situation, we can thank this exact incident for that. I always make the joke that if we wanted baskets to improve way faster as like a standard overall, we should have like wished for Conrad's shot to be like dead center. Because if that shot had been dead center, I don't think it would have stuck. The fact that it hit like low right side and had all the back side of that cage to take all the speed away. If that spits out, like, 3 years later, you don't have a single basket that ever does that again.
It takes a tragedy.
Yeah. That's what I think. So, wrapping up, Champions Cup is...
Fantasy?
Fantasy.
Oh, no.
So,
doing well.
This was a great week for Joey because I had the top two in both divisions at this event. Isaac Robinson showed up after definitely being my least contributing fantasy player this season so far. Not that he's been terrible at all. He's been solid, but of my six competitors, he was the weakest link, and he showed up big. And then... Yeah, my top two picks, Missy and Kristen, they went back-to-back, first and second. So that was pretty sweet. I will read it off. In third place, with 3,420.36 points, we have Eagle McMahon.
Bringing up the rear.
And you gained 951 points last week from Champions Cup.
That's not bad.
Not bad.
I had a pretty decent week.
Yeah. Yeah, we can talk about that. I'll read out the last two totals, and then we can break it down for a second. Simon in second place with 3,660.08, gaining 1,041 points.
Okay,
I had a bad
and
week.
In first place, we have Joey T with 3,921.33 points, gaining 1,273.5.
Wow, so it's still reasonably close. It's
still reasonably close. And I would say Team Eagle is being carried by a combination of Gannon, Paul McBeth, Cat Merch, and Owen Scoggins are all doing pretty solid for you. And Simon Holland Hanley with 904 points on her own. Accompanying that, we've got
Simon Lazat.
No, we've got Ricky Wysocki and Calvin Heimberg in the 580 range. Silva Saarinen is actually your second best player with 630 points, and Evelina at 568. Interestingly enough, Simon and Eagle are both the weakest link on their respective teams.
How unexpected.
We were bad picks.
And on my
team... I
wonder
who picked us.
My team, we have nothing that really jumps off the board. I suppose Kristen at 716 points, but I think that that's lower than both of your top players.
And Kristen's not here, is she?
Kristen is not here.
The way we should
have
done this
is that...
But I have
no... My lowest is Niklas. The way we should have done this... He's my worst player at 511.17. So...
That's crazy.
That's the depth of the Team Tamale. So, great Champions Cup. But yeah, I have... No Niklas and no Kristen for this event.
Ooh, that's going to be tough.
Because they're both back in Europe. Now, they get points for Konopiste if Niklas goes and plays, and Ale. So if either of them are over there, that's extra.
Next time we do this, if we do it next year,
yeah,
it should be mandatory that each person has to pick themselves.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
you're saying that...
Uh-huh.
He's saying that I'm...
You should have been picked.
Oh, my God. Or you guys just should have been a little more realistic.
Hey.
No, it starts with belief, Joey.
It's true. It does start with belief. It
does
start with belief. And for the first time in 13 or 14 weeks, I am believing in the stability of my lower back. I played... 20 holes across two rounds at this course, Shelton Springs, on Sunday and Monday. Then on Monday and Tuesday, I filmed three practice rounds. And then on Wednesday, I went to Denver. 24 hours in Denver. That's what I did. I flew at 9 a.m., parked my car in the SeaTac airport, and then came back this morning, for my dad's retirement ceremony. He's having a party later in June, but yeah, we surprised my sister and me. We went and surprised my father. It was a pretty great little stint, and came back today, and in that craziness of going to Denver, I totally forgot to make a decision about whether or not I should play this weekend, and the window... passed that lets you get a refund when you drop out. And so I was past that window. And I had actually felt the best that has been since Florida. And I was able to throw up to 70% power on the course without any pain. And so I was kind of in a decision space and totally forgot to make a decision. And so I said, well, I guess I'll just practice today. And if I can get through the round and I'm not in pain, I think the best thing to do is to start playing. I think it doesn't matter what I score this weekend. I think it's more just about getting some reps in and stability.
It's a good course to come back to as well.
A lot of forehands. And so, yeah, that's just a quick little personal update, because it's been a long journey for me, and it's been great to have this and other media-related things and disc-related things keeping me plenty busy throughout this whole time. But it's crazy to start to feel that childlike excitement again about flying discs, because I had to suppress that for the last 2 months. And yeah, I'm excited. We should talk about this course, Simon.
Should we do off week first, or are we going straight into Cascade?
We can off week.
You should do off week.
What did you do, Eagle?
Well, after Champions Cup, we had a week off. I had my van. Ratan and I went to Mount Shasta, which is in Northern California, one of the most beautiful places I've ever been. Spent 2 days there just chilling out. Afterwards, we went to Bend, Oregon, for 4 days just to chill out, and then we made our way here. So very relaxing. Went to two of my favorite places in the world. I could definitely see myself living in Bend one day. And yeah, Pacific Northwest is a treat. The best part of the Pacific Northwest is the off weeks, because you can just go into nature, see some amazing sights, do some swimming, hiking, and it's always a real treat. Simon?
I red-eyed home on Sunday after Champions Cup, which sucks, especially if you have two little kids you have to then hang out with all day. Energy was low, but you know. And also, oh, what I did on the plane, I saw a little link for an A-tier at Maple Hill, which also Harry Chase has been talking about, because Harry is actually spending a couple weeks off tour playing some A-tiers locally on the East Coast. And I kind of jokingly told him that I'm going to sign up for this A-tier at Maple Hill, the Cosmic Open, just so I can take his A-tier win away. And I didn't think I was actually going to do it, but then it was like midnight on the plane, and I was so bored, and for some reason, I signed up for this tournament. There was only one other person on the wait list, so I was like, maybe just give it a try.
You had Wi-Fi on your airplane?
Yeah, Delta, baby. Oh, yeah. We have Wi-Fi.
Shout out Delta.
And, Delta.
Yeah, Delta actually has Wi-Fi good enough that you can like watch YouTube videos on your flight.
Mm-hmm.
And it's free for someone who has like the miles program. So I always definitely take advantage of that.
If you want to play A-tiers, fly Delta.
Yeah, so I signed up and didn't really know I got into the tournament until I saw like 3 days later Steve Dodge make a post on Facebook that I'm on featured card. So that's how I found out I made it into the event.
Oh, gosh. And at that point, I guess you're not dropping out.
Correct. I very carefully told my wife, hey, I'll be playing more disc golf this weekend. Which ended up being a non-issue. And the reason I signed up was because I've been kind of disappointed with my game. And I thought in my head that a reason might be that I'm always taking basically a complete week off between Pro Tour events and not literally touching a disc for like 8 or 9 days between tournaments. And that can't help your game. No. Like, disc golf is a game of repetition and muscle memory.
That's what I'm worried about mainly playing this weekend, is that I basically haven't gotten the muscle reps since Q Series Championship last
November.
Yeah,
you'll be shanking it all over the place. Well, that's okay.
I mean, you watched me do it today.
Yeah. But you threw two shots per hole, one hit horrible and one really good. So there's hope. But that's kind of what it is. If you don't play almost on a daily basis, you just can't really expect super consistent throws out there. Like, timing is just tough to get right if you're not practicing every day. And I have a couple standout notes here for this event, how it actually played out. So first of all, round one was probably top three worst conditions I've ever played in. And Maple Hill Golds is not a fun course in bad conditions at all.
No.
So what I want to talk first is, you've all heard the word trifecta. So this round was the hexfecta of misery, is what I call this round.
Hexfecta.
So there's six.
All right, there's the episode name.
The hexfecta of
fecta of misery.
Hexfecta of misery.
Should we try to guess the six miserable?
So yeah, maybe you can name the six things that can make a round miserable. And this round checked every box. And a lot of the boxes.
Rain.
It rained the entire round nonstop.
Wind.
It was windy, like 20 mile an hour gusts the entire round. It was 45 degrees.
And there's three more.
What else makes a round miserable?
Waiting on every hole.
Yeah. It was almost a 5 hour round. Backup started on hole two. And it was a 5 to 10 minute wait on every single hole. So you were just standing in the cold, windy rain.
I feel like this might go with the rain, but does like terrible footing, does that count?
Doesn't count. Okay. No, conditions were horrible. So cold wind, rain slow. And then there's two more. One of them is gettable. The other one is a bit out there that I just added for the Hexfecta.
New bag?
No, but that actually was also mention worthy.
New bag?
No, our tea time, this is a hint, was at 4 p.m.
Oh, shotgun delay. Start?
Or weather delay?
No, we finished the last 2.5 holes in pitch black and had 4 or 5 spotters for each shot. And after every throw, we had to like call out, what did we call, like air or something? Or something to signify the spotters, which we couldn't see, that were 200 feet down the fairway.
Oh my gosh.
And then we had to like say that this is in the air so they would know where to look.
Wow.
So, and then it also got really foggy on the back nine. So we couldn't really see anything in the woods on those last 4 or 5 holes.
What'd you shoot?
You shot like 1080.
Yeah, I shot the best round of my year. 1078. 3 under par. And this is another thing that was noteworthy of the tournament. Guess what 1,000 rate it was that day.
It was like 6 over.
Plus 12 was 1,000 rated round one. I don't think that must be a world record. I don't think that's ever happened.
I mean, maybe before. Northwoods Black, but no, I don't even think that was that bad. That was like 6 over 1,000 rated.
I've never heard of that before.
That's insane.
Yeah, so I was the only one to shoot under par. I shot 3 under, almost 1080 rated, which again, I was like, of course. In these conditions, I'll shoot the best round of
my
year.
Did your game, like, aside from all the Hexfecta of misery?
I think what did it was that I had a new bag because I left my actual tournament bag in our rental car, which Dustin stayed on the West Coast. So my bag was on the West Coast.
On purpose?
Yeah, on purpose. Oh, okay. Because I thought I wasn't going to play.
You want to fly light.
Yeah, I decided I was going to play the tournament literally on the plane back home. So I had a complete new bag of discs, which lowers your expectations because you don't know what the discs are going to do. And the weather was so bad that you just expect it to be horrible.
Did you check the forecast before playing?
Yeah.
It looked fine?
I mean, on Sunday night and Monday and even up to Tuesday, it looked like kind of up here in Washington where it's like, yeah, 50-50, like maybe some rain, maybe it was going to be like in the low 50s, but it just got day by day. It just got worse and worse and worse in forecast. And yeah, by Thursday we knew that it was going to be miserable, but it was like still for even the New England hardcore disc golfers, it was miserable, which brings me to the last point I want to say about this is what I kind of realized during that round. And I called this the paradox of misery, which is kind of coming to the realization that if something is so bad, it stops being bad. Like this round, it was so miserable.
Your expectations change.
Well, everything was so miserable that it like stopped being miserable because it started being like funny how bad it was.
That's true.
Like I feel like if less things were bad, it would have been worse.
But it's because hard to so explain. Many things were bad.
Like everything that could be bad in a disc golf run was bad. And it's therefore like, it wasn't bad anymore because it was started like being like funny.
I mean, I think if you like barely miss your line versus like do a full like 90 degree shank, like the full 90 degree shank is so bad that it's funny.
Correct.
But the little shank is like not at all funny.
Yeah.
Which makes you think like you'd rather have really bad than just pretty bad.
I think so. I think
would
those
you say,
people
would
who,
you say it was as bad as it could have been before
I mean
before getting canceled?
Do you guys remember
I don't think it could have been any worse.
Do you remember we spent this round together. This is way at the beginning. We didn't really know each other very well at all. 2019 Masters Cup round 2.
Oh, I remember. The relentless rain at
Dela. That was one of the worst, like, rains, pure rain. That was only one of the 6 elements.
And that was also a day where I got the worst poison ivy of my life, or poison oak, whatever was out there.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you remember my toes?
Yes.
Eagle's probably seen the photo. The juices of the poison ivy went through my shoes, into my socks and like marinated between my toes.
And your toes look like prickly pears.
It was so bad. I'm going to pull up a photo for you to remember.
I don't really want to see it.
Well, I want to see it. I want to see it.
Oh, you'll see it. But you can keep talking.
Okay, so in my off week, I did a similar experience as Eagle. Maria and I, on Monday, we first went to a baseball game in Sacramento, which is the temporary home of the MLB team, the Athletics, moving in the middle right now from Oakland to Las Vegas. And they're playing for, I think it's going to end up being four seasons in Sacramento. So we went to a game with Ella and Raven. Oh.
You know what it looks like? It looks like, you know, the...
Oh, my goodness.
And that was my ankle.
Ugh. Oh, that is unbelievable. That first photo was insane.
I think I've seen Paul have worse...
Yeah,
poison
but Paul, Paul is reactive to all of those, like worse than he like puffs up. He has like a special reaction that's super bad. Do you remember that same year, 2019, glass blown open when he won, but his whole arm was all taped up because he had played the Rumble the week before and gotten poison ivy or poison oak like on his arm, and his whole arm swelled. So he's like extra reactive.
You know those like salmon roe, those like fish eggs?
Yeah.
I'm tasting those right now by looking at your toes because of the bubble.
Caviar?
Ooh. No,
that's those orange like, eggs. I'm thinking about it, but in the most disgusting way possible.
Anyway, back to my off week. We went to a baseball game in Sacramento and then spent 4 days in... I can definitively say my favorite place on the planet, which is the section of highway between Garberville and Rio Del in Northern California on Highway 101 and Highway 254, also known as Avenue of the Giants, the redwood trees. Maria and I did a day there last year, and I've done a couple trips through there in the last 5 years by myself. And this year we had the week, which was super awesome. And so we got a little tiny home on Avenue of the Giants, or basically a little bit off Avenue of the Giants. And yeah, we went hiking. Lots of hiking, lots of pictures, lots of really big trees and beautiful ferns, and lots of poison oak, actually. We identified... basically on every single trail, off to the side of every trail was poison oak through that entire forest. So it is really beautiful, and you want to go sprinting through all the trees, and just it feels like a jungle gym almost. I mean, it feels like a movie to be in that part of the world. And yeah, I think that would be, if I won the lottery, I think I would try to find a redwood grove that was on purchasable land or something like that, because I think that would be my favorite spot to be. So we spent a lot of quality time there and then continued on and drove the entire Oregon coast from south to north, stopped at the Tillamook ice cream factory and cheese factory, which is like similar to Ben and Jerry's as far as like the tour that you can do, and then continued up to the 2022 bromance site of Astoria, and then
2021,
and then yeah, on up to the Olympic Peninsula. And
shout out Twilight.
Is that where that was filmed? I did not read those books, so I'm out of the loop on Twilight.
I watched the movies.
Yeah, me too.
It's from out here.
This is where it plays, in Forks, which is like 3 hours north of here.
I've been to Forks. I went 2 years ago, and it's a funny little town.
Is there like Twilight references everywhere? Or
yeah, there's like a bunch of cardboard cutouts in the windows. They milk it for tourist money.
Yeah,
I mean, it is very popular. My wife's obsessed. Team Edward #.
But yeah, there's lots of crazy cool things to do out here. There's this go-kart thing that we might go to. We have
tomorrow for my round. I'm definitely going.
I'll go, but you'll have to wait for me to be done because I'm after you.
It's always on feature card.
No. Am I the latest of the three of us? What time are you?
I'm 12:40.
So you're the earliest.
Let me just say this. I'm playing with Gavin Rathbun again. We've never played a single tournament round together before this year. And starting at Kansas City Wide Open to the first or the second round of Champions Cup, we played five rounds in a row together. And now we took two rounds off, but now we're back here.
Yeah.
In Washington.
That's great.
It's wild.
Do you like playing with him?
Yeah, Gavin's great.
Yeah, he's nice and
very calm.
And he's quick.
Quick, calm, collected.
And good.
And good.
And good.
Fun to watch. He throws cool shots. He's power from both sides. Mm-hmm. Very simple. He makes it, the way he plays makes it look very simple. Like everything about his kind of run up and his putt is all like pretty straightforward.
Definitely. No, I'm not complaining.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about this course. Because we were there, and then I forgot about the off weeks. Simon.
Oh, I need to finish my MVP stories. Oh. I won the tournament by 10.
Oh.
Just
shout
out
teammate Landon Brooks.
Landon Brooks took second.
Who shot the three best rounds of his entire life. Back to back to back, including a 17 par, one birdie.
Final round.
Final round, besting Simon by two strokes.
Yeah.
Shout out Landon Brooks.
Shout out Landon Brooks.
That's awesome.
Yeah, very
He averaged almost 10.35, maybe?
I don't know, but he threw an envy, an electron envy on, I would guess, 12 of the 18 holes off the tee and just played for par. And therefore kind of wiped everyone else because everyone else was scrambling to save pars on every hole. And he just threw electron envy, tap and par on so many holes. It was really interesting. Something I could never do, but he has that discipline.
I think that, and also, you know, he's got at this point a lot of growing into his own body to do, in my opinion. Like he's young and, whether or not he gets like way, way, way taller, I think either way, like just kind of building that muscle as you kind of grow past your teenage years, either way. Cause like I think he'll gain power in either way.
15?
I, my best guess would be 15.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then you reminded me, speaking of Gavin Rathbun, his fiance, Destiny, who works for the Disc Golf Pro Tour at the Pro Shop. She played a C tier during the off week, and she averaged, I think it ended up being almost 220 points above her rating. I have never heard of that in my life.
A world record.
220 points above your rating. That'd be the most amazing mic drop to just casually put into any conversation. How was your round today? Oh, yeah, I shot above my rating. Oh, yeah, by how much? 220 points. So shout out to Destiny because that's insane. I think there's like less than 10%, maybe less than 5% of the PDGA membership that could say that they shot even more than like 180 points above their rating. 100 points is a lot. I remember I did that once. I shot a 1,000 rated round when I was 913 rated. I shot like 1,007 rated round. So almost 100 points above my rating.
What's the worst round rating you've ever seen?
Ever?
Ever.
I saw a negative.
You saw a negative?
Yeah, from Junior Worlds.
Negative?
Yeah, I saw a negative rating.
Oh my goodness.
How does that work?
Junior Worlds.
How was your round? I shot minus 15.
If you are...
How are you rated less than nothing?
If you are a PDGA Live scorecard nerd and you just like looking at tournaments that happen, I'm sure there are people who rip through the Pro Tour and they're like, man, I want to go see who else did what. go look at the age protected majors and go look at the junior majors. You're just gonna see some scorecards that will absolutely blow your mind. And honestly, go look at the Cosmic Open, because Landon Brooks' final round scorecard is one of those scorecards that'll just, you won't see that twice.
I mean, bogey free in good conditions is insane at Maple Golds. And to do it in that wind on a featured lead card with superstar Harry Chase was very impressive.
Yeah.
And I got to play with a shout out to the collegiate champion, Jesse. Oh, the last name, Longenecker or something. Have you heard of Jesse?
Yes, yes.
So he's Pennsylvania local, and he is 19, I want to say. High potential.
Oh.
Cool guy, good attitude, and talent.
Talent.
I mean, Maple Golds in the wind and cold is kind of hard to show talent, but it was very clear that he's going in the right direction. I think we'll see him on tour pretty soon.
Wow, good for him. Did he say how many more years he's going to be in school?
I don't know. We didn't really get to talking too much.
Because of the misery?
Well, the round two and three weren't that bad. That's the two rounds we played together.
Oh.
But, you know, playing an eighth year is still semi-serious. We weren't, like, just chatting the whole time. Probably not the most chatty person in the world.
That, and also at eight years, when it's guys who don't play with you all the time.
Yeah.
I think you're intimidating, unfortunately. You might think that you're this warm.
They're very mildly, maybe.
I think, you know, Simon maybe thinks that he's this warm, approachable guy, but... You're German. You have this sophistication.
I'm cold and
bar.
European sometimes.
Yeah. I think that's just a factor that I think Americans don't see all the time. It's right to the point.
You'll have something. Yeah, and if you want to watch the coverage, Gatekeeper Media was there all three rounds. Minus two holes of the first round because it was too dark for the cameras to see anything. They literally stopped filming the last two holes because the screen was just black.
So they couldn't see any Simon lines?
It was just black. It was kind of hilarious, actually. Again, it was so bad that it was funny.
Speaking of Simon lines...
Oh, the balance dropped this week.
Oh, I was going to talk about the fact that Simon Lines is a title sponsor of an event on tour
this
year.
That video also dropped last week. Holy cow.
Talk about both of those.
I, like, never stop doing stuff currently. It's insane. Yeah, I got to go to the Preserve and collab with Kale on kind of a bit of a tweak of the Preserve course, which we're going to in June, which is already next month. Holy cow. And yeah, I am title sponsor of a Pro Tour event.
How does it feel?
I don't know how that happened. It feels a little stressful. I don't fully understand what it means or... what it'll do for me or the tournament or the sport, if anything. But it's kind of cool to say that I'm the first to do it, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be kind of crazy to see my logo plastered all over that course. I'm not really someone who would choose to do that on my own will. And I'm sure it'll stress me out a little bit, but you know, you gotta sometimes take a leap and see what happens.
That feels like a tournament that you are destined to win one of these years. There's so many moments. I don't know if it's this year. I don't know if it's another year in the future, but I feel like you are like partially synonymous with the Preserve. Just the amount of kind of lead card appearances and the amount of highlights from a couple of those throw-ins. I don't know. I just feel like when I think about... I keep remembering. I'm like, oh my gosh, he hasn't actually won the Preserve.
Yeah.
But it almost feels like you have.
It really is a good course for me. There's barely any OB. And I mean, a lot of the holes you can kind of pick and choose what shot you want to throw because there's options. And yeah, I just never put three good rounds together there in a row. I've been close. I've been top three at least once, top 10 probably multiple times. So it's right there. I know it's definitely one of the courses I could.
This
would be a really good year to do it.
How did that project come to you, come to your attention?
Yeah, I think with the state disc golf is currently in and a lot of disc manufacturers who would usually be your title sponsors for Pro Tour events, a lot of these companies are struggling a bit. So MVP is not struggling, and they've been approached from multiple events asking for title sponsors, and they didn't want to just take on all these events. They already took on Austin this year, and of course Music City, and then MVP Open and OTB Open. So adding even more to that list was just a bit crazy. And then I don't know exactly who had the idea. Probably Andrew.
Probably.
Team manager.
Shout out Andrew Johnson.
Maybe Simon Line could take over the preserve. And he asked me if I'm interested. And I said, no, but maybe. And then it happened.
Yep. The good old no, but maybe.
Of course, but maybe. Maybe.
And then what does that, like, then it was after Austin. You went for a few days. And I'm sure everybody can watch the YouTube video. But
yep.
It was essentially a inspection and tweak.
Yeah, the goal was basically to have just some kind of reason why Simon Line would sponsor an event. I didn't just kind of want to have it so random because it's like in Minnesota. I have no real ties to Minnesota. And then on that course, I have no real ties to that course. So I wanted to have it to be in some way something that felt like I had some role in it. So I decided to fly there and tweak some holes, which I think we did 5 or 6 tweaks, mainly on the front nine, and pretty minor tweaks. We got rid of hole 5. That's probably the main thing. And then the old par 3 hole 7, which is this little straight 350-foot par 3, is now a par 4, which actually plays around the corner onto the Red Fox course. And I kind of made hole 4's second shot easier by getting rid of 2 trees that I didn't like. I thought they were random trees and kind of fluky. And then I made the landing zone on treacherous hole 6 bigger. Because a lot of shots there that were good tee shots that just went a bit too long or too straight, you ended up with absolutely nothing and had to like just pitch out sideways, or it kind of created backups that I thought were unnecessary. So I made them clean up that left long side of the landing zone a bit. So if you throw it there now, you have a straight look down the gap and can attack from there. So I hope that's better for pace of play and kind of rewards still very well-thrown tee shots with actually a look at a chance for birdie, which it's a hole that sees maybe 3 to 5 birdies around, probably not more than that.
What was it like working with Kale?
Kale is amazing. I'm a Kale fan. He's done a lot of course design, of course, and this is his baby. So I was really surprised and happy to see how willing he was to cut a tree that I said I want cut or clear an area that I wanted cleared. And he was very open with ideas. And the video was 40 minutes, but of course we walked out there for like 6 hours. So a lot of discussions and ideas were not even shown in the video, but we went through everything possible. And yeah, it was cool working with Kale. He's a disc golf legend.
It's got to be really cool, too, to have Dustin here, because all these awesome things that you're doing, all these busy things, there's like freaking videos attached to them. And they're like not like stupid, crappy little phone vlogs. They're like,
yeah, even though what we're doing sometimes feels miserable and not worth it, I think I'll be very happy that this year existed in 10 years from now when I can look back at it and be like, damn. Look at all that stuff we did. So that's the main reason we're still going.
The Truman Show, Simon style.
Yeah. Well,
it's real life.
And then the balance came out.
Yeah, the stock run of balances came out. I honestly don't really know. There's so many things going on that like a new Simon Line disc drops and it doesn't even feel like main priority in my life right now. It's crazy. Too many things are happening.
Well, let's shift back to the surface level and attempt for the fourth time here to talk about the course that we're playing this weekend.
There goes Cal Lundquist on his cello.
I don't know if
you guys can hear it. But yeah, we're playing Shelton Springs. And I played this course back in 2023 when it was a silver event. And shout out to Jeff Corns.
Shout out, Jeff Corns.
My buddy for a long time now. He's the TD for this event, and he's helped do a lot of work on the course, as well as the local club out here. Compared to 2023, it got longer and it got harder. So that's why it's an elite series now.
Yeah.
Surprisingly, the first half of the course is pretty similar, which is definitely the part of the course where you want to score on.
Oh, the part that's like fun and cool? Ah.
Mm-hmm. And the back nine of the course is somewhat W.R. Jackson / Northwood Black.
Iron Hill.
The amalgamation of those three courses in the Pacific Northwest. There's not any other than hole 18 OB on the back nine, so that's nice. So you're not going to get punished.
I like hole 18.
Simon likes hole 18. I like hole 18. And overall, I think it's a fun course to play. And I'm biased to anything in the Pacific Northwest. When you put disc golf in these massive trees, ferns, moss, and so much biodiversity, I'm going to be a fan. So I really enjoy playing out here. And yeah, I think in terms of rank for this course, I'd give it a solid A.
Letter grade.
Oof.
I'd give it an A minus.
Really? I think at the beginning of the week.
I'm comparing it to all the courses we play.
So, on tour?
Yes. And comparing it to a lot of courses, I would rather play this than a lot of courses we do play.
For fun, sure. For tournament, yeah. I guess so. After my first time playing it, I gave it a C+. But now after played it three times, I think I'm liking it more every time. So I'm at like a B, straight B.
I think a lot of those par fours can feel a bit lucky, especially in the second half. And I think it's because the true second shot gap is oftentimes very small and very specific as far as where you need to be in order to access that second shot. And so there can be a lot of good drives, not great drives. There can be a lot of good drives that don't hit a tree and hit the main gap, but end up in the spot where you're like, this feels like I'm off the fairway. And I think that's where a lot of that mentality towards this course can come from. I think like some of those negative marks come from that feeling.
Definitely. There's a level of poke and hope on this course, but the way I will defend it, if you look at the size of some of these trees, it's not as simple as saying, let's get this one out of here, because they're so big. And I mean, you'd need a squadron of Paul Bunyans to get those trees out of the fairway on this course.
I agree. I also do believe that there is a pure line on every par four on the second shot. It's just sometimes it's hard to find, but it is there. So it's
with these more mature, bigger trees, there's more scramble opportunities as well.
Yeah, the spacing
of the trees is a lot wider than a course on the Midwest or East Coast.
So it's going to be fun. I am throwing a lot of forehands. I imagine Eagle's throwing. I think I was kind of mentally counting in my head, and I'm pretty sure I have more forehand tee shots than backhand tee shots, which is obviously slightly skewed towards protecting a bit of my back, because I can throw forehands with a lot less risk right now, especially at higher power. But I saw Simon relying very heavily on a neutron detour today for those similar shot shapes. And so it almost feels like, you know, if I like to hypothesize Simon's success this week, if I was going to say, what does he need to do well? He needs to throw his detour super well. If he throws his detour really, really good this week, he's going to play good, because the amount of times that you have to throw, whatever that disc is, like for me, it's the forehand mayhem. If for those same shots, for you, maybe it's that forehand boost, that blue boost that's getting thrown everywhere.
Yep.
Right? So it's like there's going to, I think everybody in the field is going to have that disc that they have to be really in sync with this week out on the tee shots.
All right, let's round it up with predictions. What score is going to win this tournament?
What does the weather look like?
It looks a bit cold and a bit rainy every day.
Kind of 22 like under par.
Joey says 22. I say 25.
24.
Really under.
Average of 8 down seems pretty good.
Yeah, that's very good actually.
I think
in those, and in good conditions.
Last time I played this event, it got lit up. Ricky shot like a 14 under to finish. I think it was like a 33 or 34, but the course was a lot shorter. So I feel like, you know what? Everyone's playing so good. I'm going to change mine. I'm going to say 26.
Okay. Just like Champions Cup. But that was four rounds.
Well, we said at the beginning of this episode that we were going to go through emails, and instead we went through 75 minutes of podcast. So
let's do one email.
One email?
Okay, while Joey looks for an email.
Oh, can you whine?
No, I don't want to whine. I want to say for the Preserve, if you are on the fence about watching the Preserve in person, on location, then I have an interesting announcement that was just sent to me. There will be the world's largest rubber duck on site.
Sold.
At the Preserve.
In the pond?
In the pond. It will not be in the pond. I'm so sad, but that was like a lot of extra money to put it in the water.
Really?
What? So it's going to be on land.
How big is the duck?
It is the world's largest rubber duck.
And it's made out of rubber, but to go in water.
And here you can kind of see to scale a little bit. I mean, it's as big as a house, or bigger than a house. Yeah.
To have that floating on hole 18,
it
as
would
an
be
obstacle,
so cool. Like, oh, that's what I wanted, God. But it was like $12,000 to put it in water.
Worth it?
No,
it's worth it.
Do they explain themselves as to why?
Well, because you need like the equipment you need to put that in and out of water is like you need like cranes and stuff.
It needs to live in that lake.
All
right, I want to shout something out real quick as well. We're coming up on the Northwest Disc Golf Championship, and I want you guys to save this date if you are in the Pacific Northwest at the Huck Lab store in Portland on Tuesday, May 27th from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. There is going to be a team MVP signing session / hangout. So come on out. We haven't announced the lineup yet, but there's going to be a lot of team members there. They're going to be vending discs.
I'll be
there.
It's
going to be a good time. Joey's going to be there. I will be there. And then at least six.
Simon, are you going to be there?
Maybe. What day is it?
Tuesday. Ooh. Tuesday, May 27th.
I'll be on location.
Oh, because it starts on Thursday. Yeah, so you fly in on Monday.
I fly in Monday.
Wow. Simon might be there.
I might be there. I have nothing to sell, though. Wow. Maybe I'll just be there and sign discs.
Sign.
Be there and sign discs. It's going to be a fun night. So come on out.
All right. Here's the first email that we ever got from Jake Johnson. He said, "Hey, guys, not a question. Just wanted to thank you guys for the toe sock recommendation. I've only been playing for about a year and just picked up my first tournament win in my Injinjis. P.S. The toe sock Vivo combo is deadly. The Riverside Challenge in West Allis, Wisconsin." So shout out to Jake Johnson in his toe shocks.
Shout out JJ.
And I'm going to do one more.
One more.
This is from Felix Renner.
It sounds German.
It does. He is from Germany. Look at that. Hi, Joey, Eagle, and Simon. Wanted to add something for the quote-unquote healthy fast food discussion. Probably one of the best fast foods out there, even better than pizza. The Doner...
Doner kebab.
It's sort of like a Greek gyro, but 10 times better. Simon will know.
Yeah, it's an absolute crime that no good donuts exist in America, and I don't understand. I think if we ever like break our arms and can't disc golf anymore and we want to get rich, we need to open a good donut shop, and like it is the best sandwich ever.
What is the donut part? Is that just the brand of, or is it like a specific style and there's a bunch of individual restaurants that all serve the same? Or is it one chain? Idea.
No, I think it's just what the dish is called.
Oh, okay.
Is it a German thing or is it a Middle Eastern thing?
It's an immigrant.
Yeah.
It's immigrants to Germany. That kebab is huge in Finland and all of Scandinavia.
Like, yeah, but it's not
like,
the same.
It's like Tex-Mex.
Right, but, it's due to the same reason, which is the immigrants that came to those countries.
Yeah,
I got it.
It's technically Middle Eastern, but it originated in Berlin, Germany, where it's like the world famous
fusion
and the best. So it's kind of up for debate, but technically it's German because it was made in, it's from Germany, but by, like, I think Turkey people.
Turkish?
Turkey people. That's a bad podcast name.
What's the other one? Turkey people and...
Hexfecta.
Oh, Hexfecta no. of misery.
Hexfecta of misery.
It's very popular in Germany and unfortunately really hard to find over here. I moved from Germany years ago and this is the one thing I always get when visiting the home country.
Same.
Keep up the great work. Love the podcast, Felix. We did it. We read two emails. And nice. Now we get to go eat food that Eagle's going to cook for us.
Yeah, so tonight is steak night. And it's not Schlebach grilling, it is me. So I am going to be held to a very high standard, but I'm going to do my best.
I think your best will be more than sufficient for our group of hungry eaters.
Nice job, everyone.
Well, Scoville units, it's time for us to send it to the send-off, man. Lil Zottle.
Just send it.
Thanks for watching. Like and subscribe. No. Thanks for listening, and we'll hear you again
in a week or two
after this event. We'll wrap it up for you guys. Wish us luck in the nice woods of the Pacific Northwest. Good night.
Good night.